Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Coming up on Therapy.
Right now, Aaron, you cross finish lines and you're like, where's the next race? how do I start? Like, you're like, you can't even see that you've just crossed the finish line.
I know.
And
I know.
That's, it's hard to be present. It's addictive. Our value, our identity, ego, all those things, they're not real. They're just constructs, you know? And listen, girl, what I'm hearing is who I used to be.
I know.
So I really relate. I want to wrap my arms around you. I got to a place where I said, what do I want? Do I want to be known? Do I want everyone to know my name? Do I want a lot of money? Do I want to make a huge impact? And then I finally realized what I wanted was peace.
Hey, senorita, really nice to meet ya.
I was always calculating calories and macros. And when I just calmed the F down, I found my physical ideal. Am I addicted to moderate drinking?
You're very subtly admitting powerlessness and unmanageability right here alive. And I'm proud of you. That's beautiful.
Did you struggle with actual eating disorders?
Anorexia and bulimia.
Wow. Thank you for saying
that. Katie Couric, nothing screws up a kid more than having a parent on top of that kid all the time.
Kenya Moore.
Before I take a shower, I would always step on scale. And I saw my daughter starting to do that. Like, she doesn't know how to even read the numbers, but yeah. She saw me doing it.
Actress Melissa Joan Hart.
I remember the first time I was told I could be a movie star if I lost 10 pounds when I weighed 103.
Pinky Cole, were you high when you came up with the name?
I was very high.
This is Therapy. This week on Therapy, it's Chalene Johnson. She's an 8-figure entrepreneur, a top podcaster, and she's been in the health and fitness industry for 30 years. I am struggling balancing all the things. I'm an entrepreneur. I have 2 young kids. I have the shame and the guilt every time I leave to go speak or do press because it feels indulgent. I know Chalene dealt with the same things. I want to talk to her about finding that balance. I cannot wait to get into how she grew her following. She says you have to pick a niche. How do you find your niche? We're going to get into it. Please do me a favor and hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this episode. And please take 2 seconds to leave me a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help me so much. It'll help people find the show. And I would sincerely appreciate it. 2 seconds. Go right now. And now your weekly dose of Therapy with Chalene Johnson. You're an OG in the fitness and marketing game. You were doing late night infomercials. You've been in the game for 30 years. So you started when you were 6.
Yes, I was 6 years old. Yeah.
Your entrepreneurship, it started in high school. Is that the beginning?
Yeah.
Okay, let's start there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely in high school. I mean, it kind of happens if you have a parent who's an entrepreneur, and I did. And you know, my dad did like a million different things, and I call him like an old school entrepreneur where he did everything. He swept the floors, he painted the building, he opened, you know, he just did everything. And that's what I assumed you were supposed to do in order to be profitable, make more money, whatever. You know, but I did learn, and I was very fortunate to have grew up in an environment where like risk and change and doing and having like a, you know, this crazy idea, it was very much celebrated and it was what I saw. So it made it very easy for me to, that was normal, where I work with a lot of people who the risk side of it, they're like, oh no, what if this doesn't work? It just keeps them paralyzed.
Absolutely. So the entrepreneurial journey was kind of learned. You saw it from your dad, but how about fitness? Like, did you struggle growing up with body image? Were you an athlete? How'd you get into that industry?
My husband says I was not an athlete, even though I was on the varsity volleyball team as a freshman.
You
were an
athlete?
He likes to remind me how many people went to my high school. But anyways, growing up, I wouldn't necessarily, I mean, I played sports, but not very seriously. I quit everything that I did because I was allowed to quit everything that I did. I did all the things. I had a very positive body image because my mom had a very positive body image. And what I remember growing up in the Midwest is that all of the other women in my extended family were overweight, always on diets, always talking about diets. And my mom was never talked about her body. I never heard her say, in my life, I've never heard her say one disparaging thing to this day about her body. So I think that was a real blessing. But I saw all these other women dieting and struggling with their weight. And so that created this message as a kid, like, oh, if you diet, you gain weight. And my mom exercised. She did jazzercise. She was like one of the first jazzercise instructors. This is like in the late or in the 80s. And so I was like, oh, okay. So don't diet, because that's gonna cause you to be overweight. But exercise is like how you make other women happy, and it's how you are in a good mood, and it's how you can stay strong. And so I always exercised, but I didn't study exercise. I enjoyed it. I loved it, but it was never my mission, my purpose, or my degree until it accidentally became something where I realized, like, oh, I'm enjoying doing this as a hobby.
Yeah.
Teaching fitness classes, like after work, I was studying to get a better score on the LSAT so I could go to law school. So I graduated from Michigan State, and I was working as a paralegal, and I was doing personal training before work, and I was selling eBooks, and I was trying to teach women how to start their own business. And I was also teaching fitness classes at like Family Fitness. And that was a losing proposition. I'm like, I am so busy. But to like make up a 1 hour class takes like 5 hours, and I'm not even making minimum wage. Like, this is dumb. And all these other women who are fitness, and men who are fitness instructors, are faced with the same losing proposition. And I created this workout that was like, it was funky and cool. And people were like, you know, my classes were getting more popular, and people were like, can you give me your choreography notes? And I realized, like, oh, this is what jazzercise was. So I looked at the jazzercise fitness model, and being an entrepreneur and having solved other problems in my past, I'm like, oh, I can sell this workout that I've created to other fitness instructors, save them time, allow them to just like plug in their personality. And so that was the beginning of that idea.
Yes. How did you get from selling that, your choreography, and doing that to Beachbody? How far into the game?
Okay. So my husband and I started doing that in, like, I think 1998.
Okay.
And it quickly became very popular. We got in, like, I don't know, 700 fitness clubs, my program, and the instructors would pay for the continuity. So they would get new choreography, new music every month. So we had this like continuity model. And then we started developing a clothing line around it and started creating this like really cool culture. And dude, like, this is before social media.
Yeah.
This is all like word of mouth. You know, it's kind of crazy to think about now. And so then we taught, I trained presenters on how to certify instructors. And so we called them area promotions directors, and they were presenters in every state. And in, you know, I think at some point we were in probably 20 different countries. And it was a program called Turbo Kick.
Yep.
So I was really servicing fitness club, health clubs. My husband and I decided to go like all in fitness. He quit his job. We both decided to like put all the other side projects I was doing aside, away, and just focus on one thing and make it work. And we did that for, I don't know, let's see. In 2004, the infomercial landscape became very saturated, very popular for things to be fitness. Like, fitness infomercials were number one. So it was Windsor Pilates, it was Tybo. And so it was kind of like timing. You know, a lot of this is luck and timing, right? So I had this program that's in all these health clubs, and all the infomercial companies are looking for their next fitness program. And so we started getting calls and inquiries, and I'm like, I have no idea what we're doing. You know, our business is going well, but like, this could take us much further. Let's hire an agent, and who knows what they're doing. And I hired a guy in San Diego who I'd found out had been Tony Robbins' infomercial agent.
Nice.
And yeah, right. And also Buns of Steel. What was her name?
Oh yeah. I see her.
You know. Yes. Okay. Okay. So the Buns of Steel infomercial gal.
Yeah.
Tammy Lee Webb.
Uh-huh.
There we go. Tammy Lee Webb. And so I, you know, I put an inquiry to him and he totally big timed me. He's like, you think you have a unique fitness program? Everybody thinks they have a unique fitness program. Like everybody thinks they've got an infomercial. Everybody thinks, you know, all, and he's just like, it ain't going to happen, but I'll meet with you. And so I was very discouraged. But what I brought with me, all of the instructors who, you know, taught their classes all around the globe, they would, you know, their students didn't know who I was. You know what I mean? Like, but they loved sharing with me the successes of their students. So from time to time, people would send me emails with before and after photos of their students. And, you know, because we've been, you know, the workouts had been going on for like 10 years at this point. And, well, not 10 years, like 8 years at that point. And these people would have lost like 100 pounds, 120 pounds, crazy amounts of weight. Jeez. And so I would print those pictures out and I put them in a, and their, you know, testimony or whatever, their story. And I put in this binder and the binder became like one of those giant binders.
Yeah.
And I just used it as like inspiration for me, right? So I walked into that agent's office and I, you know, I put down the folder and kind of told them about, as I'm talking about how unique my program is, he's looking through this folder and like just disbelief. And I can tell he's not listening to me. And he looks up, he goes, does anyone else know you have this? And I said, no. And he's like, okay, sign here. Like literally wow. He said this will get you in every single door. And the reason why is because of the before and afters. Before and afters cost infomercial companies sometimes millions.
Wow.
So he knew that that would fast track a project for a company and it did. So we didn't have to create before and afters, which you usually have to do. We were just able to go like right to production.
How did you decide to just, you and your husband, I don't know if you had to convince your husband to just go all in on this. Like that had to be so scary to just be like, no, we're putting everything into this.
Well, we had already gone all in on fitness. Right. And so, you know, that there were lots of times when we struggled, to figure out how to be married and how to balance someone who can't shut off and, you know, just these two people with two different brains. And two people are like, you know, just, yeah, we've got young kids and we were, you know, making great money. We'd made our, you know, first $1 million on our own before we started signed with the infomercial company. And we just saw it as like, wow, this is just going to give us so much more exposure. And if we put this deal together in the right way, we're going to be on TV and it's going to be promoting, you know, kind of secondarily our own business. And so I think we were also in a season where it felt like every opportunity, this is never going to come again. We better say yes.
Yeah.
You know, and that didn't happen for too long, but at that particular stage, that's what we were thinking. Mm-hmm. And when we signed, well, we interviewed, you know, all the different infomercial companies and I just went with gut instinct, didn't go with the biggest offer. I went with the one that I felt like I could have the most control and ended up having, you know, lots of number one hits with them. We've sold tens of millions of workout programs, which is crazy to me because I just never saw myself as being like the fitness person. You know what I mean?
But you stepped into your purpose, why you're here. How old were your kids at this time when you launched like the infomercials?
My daughter was 5 and my son was 8 or 9. Yeah.
I was like, don't say 8. So my son is 5 and my daughter is 8. I am in the same spot you were at where you were having the almost like the guilt for stepping into things and taking opportunities because you feel like you should be home with the kids and get them off the bus. Yeah. And kind of like what you just said, it's like, if you don't take these opportunities as my brand begins to grow, I'm like, if I say no, it's never going to come around again. On the same note, my kids are never going to be young again. And I am struggling so much there at this point. And I'm actually in the middle of a divorce and we're co-parenting. And so I'm trying to balance like being fully present with my kids in the time that I have them. Again, 5 and 8, if you can, that's where I'm at. And taking opportunities and growing my brand, because I know that what I'm doing, which is, you know, empowering women, especially moms, to step into their purpose, let them know that they matter too, and share my story of what everything I've came out of to show that anybody can do it. And it lights me up. I know I'm supposed to do it, but I'm also supposed to be a mom and they're young. And at what point do you say, you know, like, this is not aligned with being a mom? And at what point are you like, no, I have to be aligned with my life purpose? Like, both are important. And I'm just kind of like teeter tottering. Like, I don't know. I feel torn. I feel pulled. I feel mom guilt every single day. And I recently listened to your podcast talking about this, that you were in the same kind of boat.
Yeah. I was going to say, so you know a little bit about my story, because I'm here as I'm listening to your story. I'm like, how do I tell her my opinion and give her my advice without making you feel worse or making you feel guilty? I don't know your situation. I don't, like, you know, we never know the intricacies of another person's marriage and life. We just don't. No matter what people tell us front facing, we don't know the feeling. We don't know that person's partner's mindset, potential, history, all of those things. So I can only share what was right for me.
Yeah.
And I it's different for everybody. So I could never teach other people to do what we did. I can just tell you what we did. But unless you have like exactly our DNA and exactly our past, it's going to look different, you know? Mm-hmm. But we reached a catalyst, actually an implosion, shortly after all of these things started to really take off.
More therapy in a moment. Now this.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Now, back to therapy.
I thought he was cheating on me because it was just so strange the way he was acting. He was hiding behaviors and being secretive and short-tempered, and we were so disconnected, but like just work, like we were just like both co-workers, you know, and just drive. And, you know, I was like, is anything wrong? Something wrong? I was like constantly asking that question. And he's like, no, why do you keep asking me? You know, I'm like, okay. But something was off. And so with a woman's intuition, I started digging and discovered that he had been gambling the entire time that we'd been together. And I knew he was a gambler, but I thought it was that we did it casually for fun. I didn't know that we were, you know, almost $500,000 in debt.
Wow.
So all the money that we had made there was none. And not only was there none, we owed a lot of people a lot of money. And some very unscrupulous characters a lot of money. It was just kind of in that moment that we just were like, so this is over. And I had a decision. Do I step into my purpose and my calling? What is my purpose and my calling? And for me, I believed anything I do from a work standpoint and people outside of my immediate family, people outside of the humans I brought into this world, is secondary.
Yeah.
My purpose is to get it right for them. And I owed it to them to get us right, because everything else was about my ego. And at that moment, I had to make a decision that I have to be okay with all of this going away, because if this is unhealthy for us, then it's unhealthy for my children. And I don't want that. And so we did a lot of therapy, and we had to make very difficult decisions. You know, we had to decide what matters most to us. And that's really hard to do when you are really very, very angry and hurt and you've been betrayed and there's no trust. So I had to do we did a lot of individual therapy, you know, to figure that out.
I completely relate to like being in your ego, and not to like justify being my ego, but to explain it.
I'm not saying that about you. You know
you
that,
can
right?
say, I want to be very clear. I know you're not saying about me, but I relate to it. And I have an open book. Mm-hmm. I will tell you, like, I said I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. And my husband played in the NFL for 9 years. And when his career was over, we had 2 children. and I was going to be a stay-at-home mom. That is what he signed up for. That is what I believed I would be. I had no self-worth, Shalene, for a very long time. And when I finally decided to share my truth, which was anorexia, bulimia for a decade, and wrote a book, I felt like aligned with purpose. When I get DMs and women are like, you're the first person I've told that I had bulimia. And it's because I said it first. And I found that it's kind of, I'm not saying easy, but I can talk about things that maybe other people won't go there or say, and I have found a voice and with my authenticity and vulnerability that I will say all the things. And I did find purpose. I had no clue. I was going to my grave with my secrets. I was never going to tell anybody about my bulimia. I didn't even want to say it in the book. I was like, I just want to help the women, squats and margaritas. I figured out it's living life with balance. And I, writing coach was like, are you a trainer? No one's going to believe, like, why would you? You don't have any credibility. You have to tell your story. And when I did it, everything opened up and I was like, this is what I'm doing. And he's kind of like, what the hell? Like, where did this come from? As he should, because it came out of nowhere. But it was like, I was going to be a stay-at-home mom. And he's like, now you have a show and a foundation and you're speaking and you're on TV. And it kind of came out of nowhere. And it isn't what he signed up for. But did you sign up for it because it's marriage and you sign up for better or worse? Like, he was just kind of like, it's not like aligned anymore. We were a match. It's going to sound horrible. When I had no self-worth, like when I was just like on his arm and like, okay, that worked. And then when I stepped into purpose and found my value, we're not a match anymore. Like, and I hated to do it to my kids. Like, but they are thriving and I'm knocking. Like, I hope that that continues. They're 5 and 8, but they were in such a toxic environment of us, me trying to like get him on board and get him to support me. And him just not being on board with it. And his career is done and I'm stepping into mine and it's not a fit. So I didn't realize you had that situation that you guys worked through, but it seemed like through therapy, you committed to your marriage and you made it work. And that is honorable. Like, at what point would you have been like, this is not aligned anymore? Like, or did you just say like, this is my husband and I don't care for $500,000 in debt. Like, we will get through it.
Good question.
When do you
stop fighting? So when the other person doesn't want to fight for you, he did. And I wanted to fight for him. We both always said we want to make this work and we really love each other. And so even when there was a lot of anger, even when we were like miles apart, we both knew that. So, it was a total betrayal, like someone living a separate life. Mm-hmm. And so when that happens, typically marriages don't stay together. But the way he handled it made it easier for me to make that decision. It wasn't an easy decision, but he was incredibly remorseful and he wanted to make it work. But he also didn't want the crazy life that we were living. And he also, through therapy, we both realized like we were, work had become my addiction. For some people it's exercise or it is porn or gambling or anorexia, like whatever it is. For me, work had become my addiction. It was easier to do. It was easier to do than to do the parenting thing, than to do the husband wife thing, than to feel the feelings. And I had to recognize that I had this one opportunity to get this right. And if I truly believed in myself, as I did and do, there would be all these other opportunities later. God would align those for me in a different way, that I could find a way to serve my purpose without it being a disservice to my family. And it wasn't easy. And when I say it wasn't easy, like in that year and the years after, like it wasn't easy the entire time that they were young, like until they were like out of the house. I was still like, oh, I want to do that. I want to do that. I want to pursue that. I all these things. And we had to have really clear boundaries. And again, it worked because we both cared so much about each other and about our kids. And we were good communicators eventually. Like, we weren't when that happened, but eventually we learned to be really good communicators. And again, it's, I think my story's rare. I don't like make it sound like, oh, everybody can just like go to individual therapy and you work it out. And it's not like that for everybody. I hesitate to even try to describe what my love and marriage is like today, because it makes people want to pull out a barf bag. You know what I mean? I'm always like, the people who like go on and on about like how much they love their spouse, you're just like, really, why are you making such a big deal with that? But he and I will lay in bed for hours sometimes. Like just yesterday, we stayed in bed for like 2 hours in the morning. And we're just like, no one could even describe how safe this feels.
Yeah.
And the reason why it feels so delicious is because it was so ugly and painful and torrid and explosive at times. And that's why it is as beautiful as it is today.
Yeah, you fought for it. I'm gonna need a barf bag. I think it's inspiring and it gives me hope that like I can find that. And I see you guys, it's inspiring. Like, I didn't even know you were gonna say that, but you chose each other. And I guess I will say, if only one person is choosing to work on it or work on themselves, like I have ADHD as well. I am doing like gene mutation things, trying to find like where I'm deficient. I know I have shit wrong with me, but I'm working on it. So to have the other person just be like, I'm good. It's like, I can't do it on my own.
So no,
there's
that. I don't think our situation would be very, very different if I was the only one who's willing to put in the work. He literally said, I will do whatever it takes.
I would fight for
and
it.
Not many
said
people
that to me. Yeah. But that's not what's happening. So that gives me a little bit of validation and what I'm doing. And you just made me think, like, I would always think with my purpose and why I'm on this planet is like for the women that are still in the mess and showing them they can come out of it. I have a nonprofit for teenage girls who are struggling with body image and self-worth like I did. And I'm always thinking of like serving them, but it's second to my family. Like that's it.
Yes,
like when you said it, I was like, it's not serving these people. And like, I'm supposed to help these girls. It comes second. And until they're out of the house, like I can help the girls later. It'll still be there. The work will still be there if that's my calling. So
I would give you this unsolicited advice. And Aaron, that's how we met. Like me giving you unsolicited advice.
It's solicited.
I'm everybody's bossy older sister.
I want it.
But I will say this. Put your boundaries in writing. So for example, when we went through this implosion, we call them our priority statements. So if the kids needed us, if there was something like, for example, a recital or a ceremony at school, and I had been invited to do this big opportunity, the opportunity got canceled.
Yeah.
You know, even to this day, last night, I was supposed to I have a podcast that has over 95 million downloads. Mm-hmm. It shows up on the same day, every single, you know, people expect it on Wednesdays and Fridays. And last night I had a special friend who needed my support, and that takes a priority.
Yeah.
People I will prioritize over business. And that's hard because you feel this like, oh gosh, I feel this insane amount of pressure to show up to all these strangers who I've made this promise to, but they won't be at your funeral.
Yeah,
right. They won't. And so you have to put boundaries in. Like, so we had very specific things. Like we didn't talk about work after 3 p.m. after the kids came home from school because we worked together. So it was really easy to just, we didn't want them to feel like they had just shown up at mom and dad's office. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So we had rules, and we didn't travel for speaking events. I only did one event per month. And it was only if one of us could make sure we were there with the kids.
Yeah.
I didn't miss games. I never missed a performance, things like that, you know, and that's hard because that incredible opportunity is going to come your way. You know, someone's going to be like, hey, you want to do Good Morning America, but it's on your son's birthday. You know what I mean? And you have to know that's a no.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a no.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I think too, it's like I built something. And so I want it to be validated. And it's like, I made up something that didn't exist. And so if I get a GMA appearance, it's like, I have to do it to show him and everyone that I built something that matters. I think I have a lot of noise. I played soccer in college, and it was my value. It was my identity growing up, and it didn't work out. And when something is your value and then it's gone, you lose, like I fell into depression. That's when the bulimia started. So I think this can't fail because soccer did. So like, I'm going to show everyone that I am going to make something that works and that this is going to be a success because soccer was not a success, and that was the only thing that mattered. So now this can't fail. Like, I admit it. Like, that's
because
what I have.
If it does fail, what does it say about you?
That I'm worthless. Mm-hmm. that I failed again.
Is that
again.
True?
I know. I hear myself, but I just, that's my drive, is like something that I built. And I think it too, it's like the noise from like my marriage that, what are you, like, it started out, was like, what are you doing? Like, your little show. And I'm like, my little show. Like, then I'm like, I'm going to book these, get, like, it drove me. I'm like, yeah, let's see my little show. And then I, like, it was growing. It pushed me, but like, probably to like, it took a left into like, this has to succeed so that I feel validated, and that my choice to not be a stay-at-home mom, which there's nothing wrong with, don't come for me. Stay-at-home mom is very hard, but me stepping into this is right because it's successful. Like, if that makes sense. I think that's how I'm seeing it. Like, if I'm going to do this, it has to be on GMA, or it's like your little show. Like, what are you doing with your little show?
Oh
yeah.
Oh, that's, I know. Dangerous, Erin. have you gone to therapy?
I do go to therapy. That's, I mean, I, and I basically,
are we working on that belief that if something isn't a huge success, I'm worthless?
Yeah. No. Yes. I'm working on
it. Are
that.
You?
No, oh, okay. I'm working okay. on it. You just, I know yeah. that I, this is going to sound ridiculous too. I know what I have here. And I know, I'm talking to Chalene Johnson right now. I'm booking the guests and I have the content and I know what it is. So it's like, it's frustrating. I want other people to see the value of it. Like what you said, like nobody knows what your show is.
Why you don't need that. You don't need other people's validation.
I think I need the validation that I built something after soccer was not my thing. When I thought it was, this is my value.
Is it more important than your children's?
No, absolutely. It is nothing to do with my kids. Like, I work until they get off the bus and then I'm with them.
I'm just saying, like, that I can hear that this really drives you.
It does.
This,
like, it almost
is your value.
It justifies all the mess, like bulimia, all the things that I went through all make sense now. It's like, I went through it to be able to come out on the other side and help the next person out of it. Like, it all, it gave me my purpose. And it's like, I know this is what I'm supposed to be doing, and not at the cost of my kids. Like, I only work until 2, like that's the time. And then I'm with my kids. But if there was an opportunity to, like, it would validate that I built something, even though I had a lot of pushback about building that. And it was like, see, this is a thing. Does that make sense? Like, what are you doing? You said you're going to be a stay-at-home mom. So now I have to show like, no, this is a thing. And I hear myself, but I'm just being completely honest. Like, that is how I feel about that. Like,
how many people does it need to touch in order?
Exactly. I know.
Success?
I'll just,
no,
it'll be
honest question.
I don't know. I mean, there's no number. And once I hit that number, I know that it's going to be like, what's in it. I book Katie Couric and then I celebrate it for a day. And then I'm like, who am I going to book next? What do you say? Like the weight of your potential. Like I know what this can be and I can't just sit back. It's like, I have to keep going. And I hear myself, like, it fulfills me. It really does.
But it also poisons you.
I know. I know.
Right now, Erin, you cross finish lines and you're like, where's the next race? how do I start? Like, you're like, you can't even see that you've just crossed the finish line.
I know.
You know? And
I know.
That's, it's hard to be present. It's addictive.
100%.
It's ego is, and who we are, identity, right? And value, our identity, ego, all those things. They're not real. They're just constructs, you know? And listen, girl, what I'm hearing is who I used to be.
I know.
So I really relate. I want to wrap my arms around you. And I got to a place where I said, what do I want? Do I want to be known? Do I want everyone to know my name? Do I want a lot of money? Do I want to make a huge impact? And then I finally realized what I wanted was peace.
Yes. Oh, God.
And I make every decision now on, okay, will this bring me more peace?
Yeah.
And it's a really simple formula to use when I'm struggling with a decision, you know?
Oh, I love that. And you just made me think too, it's not, obviously there's ego, but like making an impact, because I didn't feel, I want to leave, like, this foundation will be any teen girl that's struggling. I will leave something that wasn't there. Like, I have this drive to, like, leave my mark. And it's not even just like people, like, when I'm gone, this foundation will be there. Or like I wrote a children's book, and to help the same thing, like to find kids, to have them not compare themselves and to find their worth. Like, and that will be there when I'm not there. Like, I have a drive to leave something that didn't exist because of what I went through. And it's just like, it's a strong desire to keep, it's like a book and it's a podcast and it's a foundation. And I never stop. So I want peace. Absolutely. But it's like, I also have this drive that it's like, I have to help all the girls.
I do hope it's something that you'll consider working through, because I mean, like right now I'm doing this deep dive on, and when the things you're sharing with me, I see that same kind of path with other people in our space, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where it's like, gosh, I've got this opportunity to really make a difference. And that pull can be so powerful.
Or you're not doing enough.
Like, what am I supposed to do? Right.
Yeah, like I could be doing an event for my foundation every month. Like I get these thoughts and it's like, but what are you doing? Like, and I'm not missing anything in my kids' lives. It's not at the cost of my kids, but like, there's never a downtime. It's like, I'm with my kids. And then I'm like, what can I do? Why didn't I do an event here? And I wish I didn't have this pool, but I feel like this calling, it's a lot. Like, I don't, anyone that is tuned in and is like, you have Chalene Johnson, I need to know how to build a brand, can you please stop talking about yourself? That's what we're going to do next after this.
More therapy in a moment. Now this.
Guys, I have found the magic. And who would I be to not share the magic with my loyal Therapy listeners? I have been using Rejuvelift Beauty, a tightening clay that you tap wherever you need it. I use it on the little 11s between my eyebrows, the bags under my eyes, my crow's feet. You tap it, you sit for 4 minutes, and the results last for up to 7 hours. If you have a girls' night, a work event, a date night, make Rejuvelift the first step in your beauty routine. It goes on before makeup. It lasts for up to 7 hours. It is magic. And right now, Therapy listeners get 20% off at rejuveliftbeauty.com using code Therapy. Therinpy, 20% off, rejuveliftbeauty.com. That's Rejuvelift. beauty.com. You're welcome.
Now back to Therapy.
You have taught me so much about, like I just said, I write books and teen girls and women empowerment. I'm all over the friggin' place. You say you have to pick a niche and you have to niche down. And if it feels way too specific, you're probably onto something.
Yeah. It sounds like you really have. Really? You just... Well, I mean, you can do a lot of things in that lane. You know, you can do a lot of things in that lane, and you've picked your lane. I think the way to, for those of us who are entrepreneurial and have a lot of different ideas and we are multi-passionate, there's a lot of different people we could help in different areas. It's hard to just go with one. So when my husband and I were first married and I had, you know, 5 different businesses plus trying to go to law school and all these things. And it was scary for me to think about giving up a couple of them because then we would be making less money.
Like, or you what? Like, no, it. I can't. Like, you have fun in that space.
You like it.
You
yes.
want to be in that space.
And
yes.
you like it. Like the thing that I loved doing the most wasn't making us any money whatsoever.
Okay.
So that felt like I was a loser unless I could make that happen.
Yep.
And it was the thing I was the most passionate about. But I just, you know, kept hearing that advice over and over and over and over again. And from people who were like super duper uber successful, I'm like, okay, so maybe they're not wrong. Like, maybe I need to just pick one thing. And I didn't pick the thing that I was the most passionate about. My recommendation is that you look at the list of things that you have passion for. And you look at the one that's got the perfect opportunity. Like, timing is right in the next like 3 to 5 years for you to make some income there, because that income gives you momentum. It gives you more opportunities. And in many cases, when you stick to one thing and you become known for that, then you become known. And once people know your name, then you can broaden your aim. But until people are like, oh, you know, Chalene, she's the fitness lady. She's the turbo girl.
Menopause.
She's the fitness, you know, like that. they wouldn't be talking about me with menopause if I hadn't first become known. Like, you wouldn't think of me as someone who teaches marketing and entrepreneurship if I hadn't first become known for something that I was passionate for, but less passionate. I had less passion for fitness than I did for business.
Yes. And you can double down on one thing. Once people know you from that, once people know your name, then you can broaden your aim. Then you can bring in other things you want to do. And I learned from you that your feed on Instagram should be all that thing, whatever that thing is. And you can be yourself and be fun and do whatever you want in your stories, because those will go away.
All the things.
Not on your feed. And I looked at my feed. It was like my dog, me and my son doing like a lip sync. Then it was like women empowerment. Yeah. Like, you have helped me just kind of totally niche down. I wrote helping moms discover their self-worth. Like, I put that in the bio. Like, you've really just helped me direct and not be. Yeah. But what I did learn from you is I branched off my podcast, and I shouldn't have done that, huh? It should all be one. Mm.
Instagram. What do you mean you branched off your podcast?
Like, now Therapy with Erin Washington is a page, and I Am Erin Washington is a page.
Oh, I think that's fine as long as you have the bandwidth and somebody else to run and grow the other page. I think having a podcast page makes sense if you've got, you know, the staff to be able to handle it so that, you know, that can grow independently of your personal brand. Because your personal brand, like, you know, I've got probably 10 different Instagram accounts. So there's home workouts for you. That's like, you know, a big one. And then Push Me Daily and Push Journal and Phase It Up and Insta Club Hub. And these are all Instagram accounts, but I don't run them. You know, I've got a team that does that. So I always caution people, like, I'm like, if your own Instagram account is stressing you out and you're not doing a great job, it's probably not time to start another one.
Yeah.
And the brand is always you, you know, like, no matter what you're doing, whether it's a different podcast 5 years from now, or, you know, you're doing live events, for women, the thing that will attract people to those other endeavors is you. The brand is you.
I guess I just thought, like, if somebody was coming to look for the show, they'd have to like scroll down through my empowerment stuff. And then also to grow the podcast page, I will invite my guest as a collaborator so that they'll share it. And then it brings people to that page. So
maybe they will.
I know. Well, they do in the Real Housewives. Okay. I'll share it, but nothing happens, Shalene. It's like, I'm like, oh, here we go.
That's weird. I know Instagram is, that's why I said maybe they will do it, because typically, and you know, I'm just being completely frank with you, if somebody wants me to collaborate with them, the way the algorithm works right now on Instagram, it doesn't average, it shows people the smaller account numbers first. And so typically if I do a collaboration, it's like, it kills my algorithm, right?
Damn it. So don't ask me.
That changes. It changes from time to time. There have been weird exceptions where I've accepted it and I'm like, oh, wow. Like, it actually did okay. Okay. But never will it be like one of my top performing. And I don't know why Instagram does that. It doesn't make sense to me. But it's a great strategy. And I do think, Erin, if you've got the bandwidth to have, you know, to do both pages, it's a great idea. I think a lot of people do like to see a page just for a podcast. I don't have one for my podcast, but
and look, I know at a lot your of numbers. Creators do. Like, and look at you though. So it's like, is there something to that?
I think probably most of the big podcasts do have their own podcast page.
Okay.
On Instagram and TikTok.
If someone is thinking about picking a niche, you say, what are the topics that you overhear and you have to get in there? Like, that's what you should look at.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one thing. Like, you know, the thing that you like can't help but be a know-it-all, like you overhear someone talking about, you're like, oh, let me tell you. I'm actually a gut health expert. You know, like the thing that you can't stop thinking about, you're obsessed with, and you see that there's a gap, you see that there's a need, you see that there's something's missing that you wish existed, create it. I think that's one way to decide like, okay, here's a niche that I wanna focus on. But sometimes that thing is not profitable.
Yes.
So that's why, you know, I'm just going to be a realist. And I say, I look at the 3 to 5 things that are, you feel that way about, because there's more than one. Mm-hmm. And then pick the one where it's like, okay, this one makes the most sense financially right now. So at the time that I chose fitness, I was very, very passionate about teaching moms how to start a business from home.
Yeah.
But it was everything I was doing in that area was a losing proposition. We weren't making any money. It wasn't going anywhere. But I was so passionate about that. And, you know, once we got to a place in my fitness notoriety that I was like, okay, you know, we can set this and forget this. I've conquered this. I want to walk away from this now. I want to return to the thing that I've always had the most passion for, and that is helping easily distracted entrepreneurs figure out how to build a business and do so in a way that is in alignment with their priorities.
Yeah. And if you said, if it doesn't make money, your confidence will suffer. Like, you have to find something so that you're like, oh, I'm making money. This is kind of like me. Like, I'm like, oh, I got paid to speak. I am worthy. Like, it validates.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I guess I can read into that one. I learned from you. I'm all like hashtag mom, hashtag purposeful living, all this stuff. And you're like, the hashtag is not it. The algorithm is listening to what you're saying, and they're going to put what you're saying in front of the people searching for that. So it's not even, why am I even wasting my time there?
Yeah. You know, it's, if you want to put like 3 to 9 hashtags, it's, you can, because it certainly won't hurt, but you don't need to come up with a huge list. The algorithm, or, you know, Instagram is listening to us even when our phones aren't open, right? So we know that to be the case, because you talk about some random like hotel and you're like, wait, I just had an ad for this, you know, like, it's so strange. But yeah, so the only reason why you'd want to put hashtags in your caption is because it may show up on the explore page if someone's looking specifically for that hashtag. I think probably the most underutilized area of Instagram is the name field. So there's your user, right? Your handle.
Yeah.
And then just beneath your little photo is your name. And most people just repeat their user or their handle right there. But that's the only space at the moment that is search engine optimized on Instagram. Oh. So if, say, for example, yours was mom body positivity, and you put that underneath your, as your name field, that would show up if someone was typing in like mom comedy or mom positive, like whatever the term is that they're searching. So if you look on mine, whatever it is I'm promoting at the time is what I've changed my name to be.
Oh, you can keep. Oh my gosh. Yes. That's so smart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. It's like,
I think if you're verified, they require a review period, but it's pretty quick.
Wow. That is such a great tip. I always say, like, you think that you want to go viral and you want more people to see you, but you're like, that dilutes your following. Like, I had one that was 8 million and I do lip sync ones, and I can watch something and be like, I'll learn it in 30 seconds and deliver it. I do enjoy it, but it feels so cheap. And Shalene, like, sometimes I'm like, if my numbers are down, I know if I do a lip sync, it's going to get my numbers up. But those are not the people that want my content. So it's like, do you do it for vanity? Like, oh, 8 million views, but those aren't people that are not going to buy my books, listen to my show. So that's like not the way to go viral.
Unless you can tie it to, like, if the lip sync in some way, shape or form relates to your message. Yeah. And in which case you can kind of do that. But yeah. Going viral is great. People build businesses on that, right? Like,
it's
fantastic, but you just have to recognize like how does it build the right kind of follower. And so, it is a trade-off, but you're absolutely right that those vanity metrics, they drive us. And we're like, oh, my page has been crickets. I need new followers.
Yes.
So then just try to pick content that, if you know, it's like low hanging fruit, that at least it aligns with your message, or there's a way for you to tie it in.
Like, you matter too, is like the captures the words, but it's nothing about that.
Right, exactly.
It's about moms, but I know it's like a strong lip sync. I am such a perfectionist, and you talk about people are afraid to fail. You say you have to get it wrong to get it right.
Yeah. You obviously have overcome that, because if you hadn't, you wouldn't have launched. If you hadn't, you wouldn't have done all the things you've done. And I think there's probably someone listening right now who's listened to way too many podcasts, has done too much planning, has done the workshops and the seminars and the online courses, and they've bought the domain names and they've done all these things, and they just keep preparing to launch, but they're afraid that it's just not going to be perfect, that, you know, it's just not the right time. But you have to shoot and aim later. You just really do.
You
got to let those mistakes be like, okay, well, I can't fix this unless I put it out there and it's crappy. You can't improve upon something that never has seen the light of day.
Yeah.
And the number, I mean, everything that we do is such a mess. And I mean, today, the things that we launch, we're just like, okay, I'm just like, get it out. Good enough. We'll fix it. Because if I don't, we'll wait too long. And it's just like learning to let go and to recognize it has nothing to do with you. It's a product. It's not me. Right. So, and that takes a level of disconnect from the outcome and to enjoy the process instead of the outcome, to enjoy the journey to what I, and I know it sounds cheesy, but like literally you just have to go like, I am getting somewhere if I just push these things out before I feel ready to show them to the world. And somebody who's still at home making sure that it's been spell checked for the 1500th time and that the brand colors are perfect and the content is exact, like they just will, they're imprisoned. They are imprisoned by their own perfection. And it's a bummer. Because some of those people are like, they're usually people who, I'm like, the people who are like this are usually way smarter, way more creative, way more artistic. Like they're way more everything than me. And I'm like, why are you doing this to yourself? Do you not get it? You know?
Yeah. Everyone wants it to look perfect, but I know like it's trending now that you should show yourself hitting record and then it's not edited pieces. Like it's the stuff that works.
For sure.
Exactly. And it's like, you think that it has to look a certain way, or I would do it just like other, like I started out in like the mom space and just talking about my kids and like writing about my kids. And I would see these pages and it's like, okay, a million followers, the colors are all the same. And I tried to make mine look like that. Mine didn't grow until I just, you can't do it like somebody else. That's what makes them unique. That works for them. And when you're trying to do it, it's not going to come off. People can tell you're not being authentic. And I would do that too with like, if I got like a brand deal, like to do a post, I would go on their page and be like, here's what these other people did. Here's the ones they have. So I would do it just like them.
Yes.
And then they'd be like, can you do it like how you do your other, like funny? And I was like, oh,
yeah.
Or they'd be like a lip sync. Can you do like a lip sync? And I'm like, yeah. And that's so easy for me to do, but I thought I had to do it like their other stuff looked, but they hired that person to do it how they do it. They looked at your stuff and they want you to do it. It's like you get in your head and it's like, well, it has to look like this. They're coming to you because of who you are. So it's like, it's okay to just be authentically you. It doesn't have to look like anybody else. And I'd always just get wrapped up. Well, they have the following, so this is the way to do it. And that's just not it.
It's so much easier to do yourself. It's hard. Right. It's hard to imitate others and like keep the story straight. And you can lose sense of who you are. And it's so much easier just to show up as yourself. But it's also very tempting, right? Because the social media keeps feeding us, oh, this is what's popular. This is what's popular. And so you're like, okay, so that's who I am. You know, it can just really be confusing.
Yes. Is there anything that you're just like, you see other entrepreneurs doing that you're just like, oh my God, stop. Like that is not it.
More therapy in a moment. Now this. Now back to therapy.
Girl, don't even get me started.
Is this a whole other podcast? There's no time.
You know, I the thing that drives me crazy is fake, phony transactional relationships, like the regurgitating of the same 20 people on the same 20 podcasts. And now we're all excited that my best friend is launching this book. I'm just like it's so transactional.
Thank you for saying that. I feel the same way.
Don't you dare ask me to hold up your book and say, this book is going to change your life. Cause I'm not doing that.
Oh my gosh. I feel seen. Yeah. It's the same. I would always be scared to say that. Thank you for giving me permission. I know exactly what you're talking about.
I can't stand that. I can't stand the, you know, like this person, you've had them on your podcast once and they pretend like they're best friends. And it's really because they want you to promote whatever it is they're doing. I don't know. I've never been down for transactional relationships. Homie, don't play that game. I don't network. I like cool people. And if those cool people are doing something in business, then awesome. But like, it's such a small circle because it's real to me, you know?
So you're saying
I don't want to go on vacation with you. I'm not. Well,
we're
not. Work on it, Aaron.
So wait, I thought we were best friends because you did my show. Understand. And I've been that, like, you try to leverage that. But then if I want to book somebody, I'm going to tell you right now, even if you don't like me, I just did. Here's a recent episode with Chalene Johnson. I would say
no, that's different. That's totally different. That's okay. Totally different. No.
Okay, great.
No, it's the person who's like, hey, I'm reaching out on behalf of I'm so-and-so's assistant. I'm reaching out on behalf of you. She wants to send you an amazing gift.
Because she wants you to post it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, or the gift is because, you know, there's a book coming out in a month. It's like, yeah,
like, I get it.
I don't know.
Okay.
But it's the space that we're in, and that's what it takes. I don't think I would, in fact, I know I will never write another book with the goal of having it be a New York Times bestseller or a bestseller of any kind, because I know what's involved.
Yeah.
And it's not a money-making proposition. It's so hard, and you have to do so much baby kissing and so much promotion and so much money involved in. And it's just like, because why? Because you want so many people to hear that message? Bullshit. If you want so many people to hear that message, you'd record a free podcast. So stop lying. That's not what it's about. It's about your ego. It's your ego. So 100%. People would just stop saying things that aren't true, because it's so obvious to the rest of the world. Like, no, it's not that you want everyone to hear this message. It's that you want to sell the book, and you want to be on a list so that you feel validated. But you don't need validation. You are already enough. You are one of God's children. So you don't need to have some credential after the end of your name.
You know.
And I want young entrepreneurs, you know, because I'm at an age now where I'm 55, so I get to be a little bit sassier and say things to the younger generations, and hope to help them avoid some of the heartaches and some of my past missteps.
And look what you've built just doing it that way and being you. When you're talking about the same people that are on the same shows, like, it is so inauthentic to me. And I will listen before I have a guest on, I will listen to them on other shows, and I will hear these hosts. They're saying the word, like the buzzwords, and it is so scripted and just not,
dude.
But they have 100 million downloads. And I'm like, what am I missing? Like, obviously I was missing some things in my titles because you really helped me out with that. And but I'm like, I have like real conversations and great guests that I like hustle to get, but it's not like a top podcast. And then I will be a guest. This is awful. I'm not gonna say names, but like, I will be a guest on shows, and like my publicist will be like, this is a top 20 parenting podcast. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like,
here we go.
Kidding me. Like the questions and they'll be like, let's start with an icebreaker. Have you ever, I'd like to just, and I'm like, is this real life? And I'm like, that's a top 20 podcast. What am I missing? Like, what do they know? Because it's not strong, but the host is not strong. And it's very, like, it makes me frustrated. Cause I'm like, am I missing? I know what I have here, but no one's finding it. And the one
That's not true. I found
it. It's not on any, I harassed, and I stayed.
But I listened. I thought it was great.
I know, and I appreciate that. But like, had I not asked you to be on my show, you wouldn't have found. It's never charting, and the ones that are, that my publicist gets so hyped up about that I'm going to be a guest on, I call her after, and I'm like, I don't even know what I that was. It's not strong, but it is a top.
I've done those.
What are they doing? Like, it bothers me.
So numbers attract numbers, right? So if you go and look at someone's page and it's like moderately interesting, and you're like, oh, they have 1 million followers, you're like, oh, that's cred, like this person has receipts, and so you're like, therefore they have clout, I will follow them too. And so a following grows a following, and so that's one of the things. Second thing is that a lot of top podcasters and social media gurus pay for advertising, you know, pay to grow their podcast, grow their listenership, and that's another way to do things. And I think that's something to look at.
Okay.
There's also a lot about timing. Like, so when did this person start? When did they?
Because
now everybody has a podcast, right?
Like, I know.
Your brother has a podcast. So it's like my dad sent me a text like 2 nights ago. He's like, Beanie, that's my nickname. He's like, Beanie, I'm gonna need some podcast equipment. I'm like, oh god,
you have a podcast.
I'm like, Dad, no, your stories are so boring. But so everyone's got a podcast. So it's just like social media. We are in a social media recession, and podcasts are a part of social media. We're in a recession because there is so much supply, and everyone has not just one Instagram account and one podcast. I've got two podcasts and I've got 10 Instagram accounts, right? Mm-hmm. So from when we started in social to where we are today, there's far more supply, and not one person who's listening right now is like, man, I wish I could consume more social. We all want to consume less.
Yeah.
We want to follow fewer people. We're like, don't tell me about another podcast I have to listen to because I've got a list a mile long. So we want less. So the demand is way down and the supply is way up, which creates a recession. And we know that in recessionary times, businesses can still thrive. And so brands and personal identities can still thrive too. But the way you do that is by standing out and persevering, right? Just the act of persevering will put you ahead of 90% of the competition.
Yes. And standing out, just finding that little thing that makes you just a little bit different.
That little thing.
It doesn't have to be a big thing, but something that makes you different than the other people in your niche. Like,
Your audience will tell you, like, you're like, you don't, at least most often it's the way people are describing you. Right. So, you know, in our space, like you and I know who Gary Vaynerchuk is, but my mom doesn't know who Gary Vaynerchuk is, but if I were to describe him to her to check and see if she knew who he was, I'd be like, Mom, have you ever seen, you know, the guy, he gives quick business advice. He's like really in your face, got kind of a little whiny voice. And he's constantly dropping F-bombs, but he's like really in your face, like a New Yorker. So all of those things are brand.
Yes.
Right. So, and that's not things he did intentionally, but like the fact that he swears so much, it's how people describe you.
Yes.
And so you really have to listen to your audience and hear how they are describing you. That's part of brand. And then it's the promises and the way that you show up over and over and over again. So it becomes kind of like predictable. People are like, oh. And so it makes it easier for them to describe you.
Yes. This has been everything I hoped it would be on relationships and branding. I have three more pages about fitness, perimenopause, all the things. I'm going to need you to come back if you come back and do a wellness episode, because you talk, I learned about magnesium from you and protein. And, I want to talk about hormone replacement therapy, and we have already gone over an hour. And so I need
you. How old are you, Erin?
I'm 42, but I'm telling you, I am in perimenopause. I know I am.
Yeah.
And I know it sounds young, probably. But my mom said it was the same age. And she goes, you were 16. She's like, you don't remember? Like, you were yelling at me. I'm yelling at you. It was just like hormones everywhere. Cause I was like, Mom, she goes, she couldn't believe I couldn't remember. She goes, when I was 42, and it has a lot to do with like when your mom went through it. Right. I am.
Yeah.
Genetics. Okay. We need to talk about,
it can start as many as 10 years prior to menopause. For most women, it does 10 years prior, 7 to 10 years. So some women can experience perimenopausal symptoms as early as 35, 36. And we know that the younger, I'll just say this and then we'll come back and do a deep dive.
Okay.
But the younger a woman understands perimenopausal symptoms and how to start supporting her hormones long before menopause, it makes the menopausal transition so much easier. Not a breeze, but so much easier.
Yes. You feel equipped. I cannot wait to deep dive into that. What is coming up for you? Where are all the places people can find you?
Probably Instagram or my podcast. Actually, I would love for people to check out the podcast. It's called The Shalene Show. And, we're on YouTube or whatever app you listen to your podcasts. Just check out some of the titles. Hopefully one of those will end up serving you. Thank you for having me, Erin.
Absolutely. It is so good. I love your show. I cannot thank you enough for your time. And I cannot wait to have you back to talk about wellness.
You got it.
If you are not subscribed to Therapy with Erin Washington, please hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this. Please leave me a review on Apple Podcasts so that more people can find it. And thank you for listening and being along on this journey with me. If you have any subjects that you want me to talk about, follow me on Instagram at I am Erin Washington. Follow the show at Therapy with Erin Washington. And I will see you next week for more Therapy.